holding up. Black card at the bar like I gives a fuck.
Come on.
Should be out when we walk into the set. Fuck the fellas looking jealous. Play the back and get wet. Three pound in my waist and shank in my sock. You either get cut, get stuffed, or get shot.
This is the tale of Captain Jack Sparrow.
Our North-South Connection mateys, JT here with another mailbag installment. Hope everyone had a great Easter weekend, if you celebrate this past weekend, Passover, etc. And it is, of course, WrestleMania weekend, I guess, when this is airing. Hence the pirate theme, a little Captain Jack Sparrow to bring us in. I want to thank you, as always, for delivering your questions for this mailbag episode. You can submit these questions at the Place to Be Facebook group. To search Place to Be on Facebook. There's a group there you can join, request access. And then usually about a week or so before each episode, I put a post up calling for questions to then talk about on the show. We also talk about all sorts of other things at the Place to Be Facebook group. If you're listening, I also want to take a minute to thank you for subscribing to the North-South Connection Podcast Network. And I'm going to do a challenge here in April, a challenge for each of you listening to share it with a friend that may not subscribe. Do that for us. We do a lot for you. We love doing it. You do a lot for us by listening and downloading, but a little extra never hurt nobody. So if you don't mind sharing it or maybe throwing us a like on Apple or other podcast forums or maybe write a review, if you can find it in your hearts in the month of April to do one of those things for us, we'd really appreciate it. All right, let's dive in. Usually I go for about 30, 35 minutes or so here and try and answer as many as I can out of the old sack. I have some of the new ones. I also keep a stash of older questions that I don't get to along the way as well. So I'm going to start off with, I believe, a new name. And if you have asked one before and I forget, I apologize. I only do this monthly and my brain has gone to shit over the last few years. But Stephen Van Kooten, I've heard a lot of talk about Ted DiBiase and Jake Roberts being reappraised to some extent for their, at best, lackluster pay-per-view output in the WWF. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the standing with you as overall workers. Which you thought had an overall better career in the WWF, do you think their body of work on big house shows like MSG mitigates the disappointing match quality on the big shows? This is a deep one, Steven, and I appreciate it. And I think it's timely, given Scott Kroskal and I, the Place to Be podcast, over the last 5 years, have kind of deep dive into that era of WWF, 1985, and we're heading into 1992 now. So we're really kind of... I've watched a lot of the big stuff that's out there, pay-per-view, Saturday Night events, and all of the MSG house shows available to us during that time. And I think without going back and digging through my notes and the grades to see who actually nets out as a better worker, I think Jake Roberts is more consistent. And I think that's because his stories usually were just more emotionally tied. It is interesting. Aaron George talks about this a lot, how these two guys tended to not show up on the big pay-per-view events. It's weird, especially with DiBiase. After the Savage stuff, he does leave a lot to be desired from a big match standpoint. However, like Jake, he also does have a lot of really good stuff at MSG, and that includes them together. I had them all pretty much 3 to 3.5, all their showdowns, including WrestleMania 6, which I had at 3 stars, which I know some aren't big fans of, but in rewatching it as last time for PTB, I've come around a little bit on it. I think it was okay. Disappointing, I think, mainly because of who's involved. And I think that's what it comes down to. Now, as characters, I don't think anyone can ever question their standing. And a lot of that is just due to notoriety, right? So you have two of the biggest names, the most recognizable names. I think if you throw those out to anyone who was, you know, minimum 10 years old from 1988 on, at this point, even if they're not fans, you say Jake the Snake Roberts, most people are going to know him. You say the Million Dollar Man, most people are going to know him. So I'm checking really quick just to see where they landed. I had them actually back, very fitting, Stephen. I had them back to back on my GWWE list that we did almost 5 years ago now, and we'll be revisiting soon as one of our stretch projects. I had Jake Roberts at 30, DiBiase at 31, and that feels good to me. I think I would have Jake slightly above to answer your question, but not by much. Like I said, the benefit for Jake is the stuff like the Savage feud in 91, the Warrior stuff that comes in late, you know, late in his run right there, really helps get stuff over. The Steamboat feud, a ton of fun to relive. Even the stuff with Earthquake, he had some really good matches with Earthquake at MSG that held up nicely. So, and of course, the blindfold match. So I think Jake's record at shows, at bigger shows, definitely holds up maybe just a little bit more than DiBiase. The one thing really carrying DiBiase is the Savage, the Mega Buck stuff in 88. I do think DiBiase was good at Survivor Series. I always like him there. And I do think he's a very good Royal Rumble performer. Aaron and I haven't gotten to him yet. At now entering the Rumble, it'll be a little bit. We have talked about Jake, who did show well there too. So, you know, those are kind of intangibles that they bring, right? Things you don't think about when you're rating them as workers. You know, they existed during a time where the bulk of pay-per-views were really two, right? So it's tough to compare them to even like a Cesaro or something, right? Who's had 30 to 40 pay-per-view matches probably, because there's one or two every month versus those guys who, if you take out Survivor Series and the Rumble, where it's a little bit harder to, off the top of your head, say, oh yeah, DiBiase was great there, right? You're pretty limited. I mean, if you really break down like Jake's pay-per-view appearances, it's not a ton. So, at least as far as like matches go. So, yeah, I don't know. They're interesting guys. I think awesome characters. Definitely two guys that came up a little bit short sometimes when it mattered, when it was needed in the big match situation. And then I think what hurts DiBiase retrospectively too is his managerial run ended up being so bad. And the Money Inc. run is pretty maligned. By some, not named Parv, but in certain ways, right? So, like, a lot of the matches were kind of boring in retrospect. They seemed good at the time because there were two big name guys coming together, and DiBiase had that cred. But outside of, like, the Steiner stuff, they really are lacking there, too. So, I guess if I had to say one was better than the other, I'd probably go Jake. But, again, they both stand out from a character standpoint, from a storyline standpoint. Both had very memorable stuff on pay-per-view. But they also had a lot of stinkers on pay-per-view. And I would say the MSG definitely helped both of them because I think that was an element that worked well for their styles. A little bit more time, a little bit less hectic of a pace. They could kind of work in their psychology and the storytelling in that setting. And like I said, I would search some of that out if you have access. Like Jake's stuff with Earthquake was a lot of fun. They had great chemistry. His stuff with Steamboat, really good too. And then DiBiase and Jake had some fun stuff. This is a DiBiase Bret match. It was really good. So there is stuff peppered all throughout there. It's just those singles matches. You think of DiBiase, Beefcake, Jake and Bad News, Jake and Andre, DiBiase and Beefcake, which I just mentioned. The Money Inc. stuff. You know, you get little blips here and there that are fun, like DiBiase Ramon at SummerSlam 93. DiBiase Virgil at SummerSlam 91 is really good. So he could do it too when he wanted to, but they definitely have a much more unbalanced ledger than you would like to have with guys of that caliber. Brian Meyer, apologies if you answer this, but runner on base to start extra innings. Your thoughts? I hate it, Brian. I really hate it. I'm not like a super baseball purist. I don't need, you know, I'm not Bob Costas Jr. Like, I don't care as much about the romance of the game that some do, that some put on top of it. I'm all for like multi-league DH. I think that should exist. So I'm in for rule changes. And my feelings on umpires have been well documented. I think robot umpires and automatic strike zones and stuff like that should exist to help the game grow. But to me, a runner on second and extra innings, like, that dramatically changes things. Two things that I did not like out of the COVID season that seem like they may stay are the 7-inning doubleheaders, which I hate. And that just feels like, you know, beer league softball to me, or like what are we doing? Why are we dramatically altering the game? I know we're trying to save time, and I get it during the pandemic year that they were trying to just get them in and out as quickly as possible, trying to squeeze the games in. That is not something that I care for to stick around long term. And honestly, I thought it was this year, and I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's in place. Runner on second, I absolutely hate. To me, it would be like allowing four pointers in basketball in overtime only. Like what's the point? Like, I don't know. Just why dramatically change the game just because it's extra innings? Like, you know, I guess hockey has a shootout. That's the closest thing. But why not just do a fucking home run derby then or something? That'd at least be more exciting. I don't know. You're putting pitchers in situations to come clean out a bullpen. You got guy on base with it not always be on base. And I don't know. Just not a fan. Again, I'm not super into the romance of baseball, but not a fan. All right, my man, Jimmy Grunberg. I'm reading this because I thought he crushed it over on the PTB Pop Experience feed. If you haven't checked that out, subscribe to it because they're churning out all kinds of great stuff. There's a weekly pod on Falcon and Winter Soldier, Andy Atherton and his crew, and a big movie that drops. They do a podcast on that, thing on TV with our buddy Greg Diener. Like, there's just so much fun stuff on that feed. But my buddy Jimmy and one of my best friends, John D'Amato, and now Greg Diener, I believe, as well, are doing a podcast breaking down the Mighty Ducks Game Changers on the Disney Channel. And I thought for kind of the first time he's really hosting a show like that, Garuni did an awesome job. So kudos to you, my friend. Name one WWE, WCW, and ECW pay-per-view event you wish you could have attended if money was no object. All right, good one. I think WWE's pretty easy for me. I think it would be One Night Stand. WrestleMania 6 is in the mix. And WrestleMania 30 is definitely one. Because now having been to a WrestleMania in New Orleans, a lot of people I knew were at WrestleMania 30. I was kind of on a semi-streak, right? I went to 29, missed the next two, but then I've been since. So it's like, yeah, it's 30 and 6 are up there, but One Night Stand 05, especially now, like, as much I've gotten into ECW, thanks to Extreme Throwaway Dance Podcast, myself, D'Amato, and Jenny Smith, every other Thursday here, we're into early 96. Looking back at just how awesome that atmosphere was and like thinking of how exciting it was for those diehard fans that got to attend that, that grew up loving ECW, would have been an awesome experience. So I think that's my number one. WrestleMania 30 is right there with it. And then WrestleMania 6, I just love so much. I don't know if I would have appreciated it as a 10-year-old though. Whereas I think the other two, I really would have appreciated being at more at the time. So I'd say, yeah, WrestleMania 30 is a hard one not to go for because just New Orleans, the Yes stuff, Brian, the streak. I mean, you know, it's awesome for all the guys I know that were there. My buddy Chad was there. Him and I do the Wrestling Warzone every other Thursday, alternating with Extreme Throwaway Dance. We just did Bash of the Beach 96. We're closing in on International Incident. We started at SummerSlam 95 right after that, basically the second Nitro. And we've been crushing it since. One of my favorite pods to do. Chad and I really locked in. All right, so that's WWE. WCW, I don't know if one jumps out at me as, like, I wish I was there. I mean, I guess we just talked about it. Bash of the Beach 96, I guess, seems like an easy answer, right? I mean, you get the big heel turn. It's a great show, all-time show. So I guess that would be the answer. In theory, it'd be cool to say, like, Starrcade it at 97 or something just because of the hype behind it, but it ended up being such, you know, kind of a turd. Can't say I missed out. And then if you really want to go back, I mean, you got Bash 89, maybe an old Starrcade in Greensboro or something would be really cool. Just for that experience, that old school territory NWA atmosphere. ECW, I'll be honest, Grooney, I'm not as dialed in on some of those. I guess I could cheat and say One Night Stand for that and then WrestleMania 30 for WWE. Maybe Barely Legal 97, their very first pay-per-view event would have been pretty groundbreaking to be at. And I guess I'll learn more about those as I go through the Extreme Throwaway Dance. All right. Thank you, sir. Let me see. What is your best and worst experience meeting a wrestler? Kevin Tucker. All right. So I've had a lot of good ones just by luck. And like a lot of wrestlers I've met have been super cool, whether I'm paying to see them or not, or just happenstance running into them and then being cool enough to chat for a few minutes. My first ever Comic-Con I attended in 2019 with my good friend Graham Cawthon. We went in Providence, and I got to meet Kurt Angle, which was just awesome. Obviously, one of my all-time faves, and that was a no-brainer to me to take a few minutes to get to sit and talk to Kurt. I also met Lex Luger at that Comic-Con and Mick Foley. Luger was great, too, just to sit and talk to for a few minutes, and I was happy to see him, you know, feeling good and upbeat there. One super nice guy, honestly, I met after a show with my good friend John Walters, wrestled locally here in Rhode Island, and Mike Bennett showed up. he wasn't working the show, but he was there. And he was really nice to talk to for a few minutes before the show. And then Tommaso Ciampa was hanging out after, waiting for his ride. And he was really, really cool guy, too, to talk to. My worst couple, I ran into Colt Cabana at my first ever WrestleCon at WrestleMania 29. And, you know, Scott and I, the podcast was a couple years in, we're probably feeling ourselves a bit. And the podcast game was not like it is today, right? It was, the landscape was extremely more thin in 2013. And Colt had just been doing his probably like a year or so in, and it was really starting to blow up, Art of Wrestling. And we just went up to him and talked for a few minutes and was like, hey, you know, if you're ever looking to be on a show, like, we'd love to have you. And he just gave us the, I don't do any podcast but my own. And like, he just kind of turned his back and walked away. And I was just like, ah, all right. Well, yeah. You didn't have to be like that. You just say, hey guys, you know, appreciate that, but whatever. Anyway, so I had always kind of stuck in my craw a bit, but I've heard he's a cool guy, so whatever. And then fucking Simon Gotch, the bane of my existence, WrestleMania 34 weekend in New Orleans was amazing. Walking around Bourbon Street, and this motherfucker, we could not shake him. Like, it all started when we were at a bar drinking and having dinner before we were about to head out. Well, it wasn't even a bar. I think it was a chicken place. And I'm definitely already buzzed. And D'Amato comes in, and he's like, Aiden English is here. And I was like, oh, sweet. So I run out, and I start doing the Rusev Day thing. And it's not Aiden English. It's fucking Simon Gotch. And he's all pissed off. He's like, oh, what the fuck, asshole? But then he just, like, started talking to us. And we got a group picture with him. And it seemed cool for a minute. And then, like, he just kept not getting the hint that we weren't that interested in hanging out with him. And he kept just, like, following our group. And then we'd run into him again on Bourbon Street. And he'd stop it. It's like, all right, just enough, Simon Gotch. Enough. But that weekend also stands out because I happened to run into Coco Beware on the street. And that's one of my all-time favorite random wrestling meetups with a great picture, an all-time Coco Beware picture. All right. Thank you, Kevin. Oh, here's a fun one, but I'm not going to give the answer because it's a tease. But Jake Williams, who hosts Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast every other Tuesday on the North-South Connection, he is just about to hit SummerSlam 02, and he has been trekking there for a while. All the Raws, all the SmackDowns, all the pay-per-views, and he's going to crush it when that drops. I know it because he is dialed in on all of the build. He's watched it all. And it's all lived up to the hype. It's a super fun show on a forgotten era. That rotates with TNA Never Dies every other Tuesday. It's on a little bit of a hiatus right now. It'll definitely be back in May. Myself, Aaron, and Jenny talking the madness that is the early days of NWA TNA and a journey through the demented mind of my best friend in the world, Aaron George. All right. God, so Jake says, stealing from Aaron on the year that was, that's last one I promised for a bit, every other Monday, Aaron is ranking all the WWE pay-per-view years. He spent 3 years watching every pay-per-view and ranked the years based on the metric system that he created. Jake says, what happens if The Rock is a wrestling lifer and never goes to Hollywood? And I rarely like to give away podcasts. I like to surprise, but special treat for those listening, I can tell you a week from tonight, from today, the day that this drops, no holds barred, this topic will be covered with a very special guest. So stay tuned. You'll hear all of my thoughts there on what happens if The Rock stays in the world of wrestling. Every other Monday with Year That Was is also now entering the Rumble. Myself and Aaron are talking and breaking down every single Royal Rumble performance by every single Royal Rumble performer, going chronologically. So we're into early 89 now. And our newest episode that dropped this past week was all about Andre the Giant. So we talked about his awesome 1989 and 1990 Rumble appearances. Better wrestling video game from Genesis SNES era, Raw or Royal Rumble, Richard Colon. Oh, God, I loved both of those games like they were my children. I guess Raw because it improved upon Royal Rumble. But God, I loved Royal Rumble. I played that for so many hours. Me and Josh Richer used to wear those buttons out. You know, it was a game I didn't have, but that was pretty cool too, was Super WrestleMania, which came before Royal Rumble. It was kind of the first game to really, like, get into the theme music. Like, the theme music was in the other games too. Like, Steel Cage Challenge, WrestleMania, Wrestling Challenge. Like, those were in there. WrestleMania Challenge. But, like, the Super Nintendo music was so much better. And Super WrestleMania had Sid, Legion of Doom, Natural Disasters. Like, that's kind of a sneaky, forgotten game with a cool roster from that kind of early 92 era. But I think I probably, they're both great. I think Raw is probably just better. I think they built on it a little bit. And they had a really cool roster too, including Luna Vachon, who was in there, but played a lot as Bigelow. But man, I could talk about these games forever. I played the shit out of all of them. I think another good question is, like, what's the better PlayStation game too, right? Attitude, and then before that was Raw's War, which is also awesome. I remember Attitude got pushed back a few weeks, and it was like the longest friggin' 3 weeks of August ever in my life when they announced the delay, just calling GameStop every day, trying to figure out when the fuck it was dropping. But that was great, too. Speaking of, like, music and entrances, like, the Gangrel entrance of that game was so sweet. All right, Ryan Gray did this because he knows it aggravated me last time, but the 100% tag team game, he gives me five teams, and I have to say, a percentage breakdown of who carried the team. The Brainbusters, Arn and Tully. And I'm just to give a balance, because they're all 50-50. Oh, God. I mean, this was really 50-50. I guess Arn has more success with other tag teams. So is it him? Is he the catalyst that carries these teams? But Tully's so awesome, too. He was the bravado of the team. They were both workhorses. But Arn was definitely the true, like, workhorse that would carry the load, and Tully would be more of the showman. I guess just based on Arn's successes with other teams, I'd probably go like 60-40, because I think he was like maybe the extra glue that brought the team together. But they both crushed it. Edge and Christian's a good one. To me, it always seemed like Edge was the more of the standout. When you looked at it, he always felt like the guy that was likely to be the one to break out and be the star, which, you know, pretty much ended up happening. I think Christian always felt like the guy that was going to maybe hit, and he ended up doing it. You know, he ended up sticking around, having a great career, and being not that far behind Edge, really. But yeah, I think Edge was the more of the star, and Christian was more the worker, too. It's... And I think there's just a trend in all these teams when you really break them down. I don't know. I mean, could Edge and someone else have worked just as well? I don't know, because they had that, you know, they worked, they were friends forever and grew up together and got to this point together. So it's like, I don't know if they could have had the same success. Edge obviously was another good tag team. So was Christian, stuff like, you know, him and Lance Storm had a really good team. So whatever, 50-50. Screw you, Ryan Gray. The Bushwhackers, Luke and Butch. Both were great sellers, honestly. As the Sheep Herders, they were super violent. Even as the Bushwhackers, like, they had some stuff that worked well. God. I don't know. Luke is still walking, so maybe him. Miz and Morrison. This came about at a time when Miz was starting to put it together. And it was needed for him, too. And Morrison as well, you know, had already had that great team with Nitro. Mercury, Eminem. They had a great run. So I'm going to go 70-30, only because I think early on Miz got carried, and this is what made him kind of get to that next level. You see it a little bit in those, like, matches, like, you had the match with Benoit and, like, stuff here and there where it was starting to click for him to be more, you know, more than just, like, a joke from MTV. But I think it was Morrison that really brought the team together. Now, Miz did help a lot in the talking realm, because that was something that Morrison absolutely struggled with. There was that infamous, you know, when they first split him up and stuck him on Raw with him and Melina, and the fucking thing bombed. So I think they helped each other for sure. But I think Morrison brought Miz along in the ring as making him a very good tag worker, whereas Miz definitely helped carry the kind of the talking and the promo stuff. The Rockers, I'm going 55-45, Marty Jannetty, at least until the last year when Sean comes up to speed. I think Marty was definitely more of the workhorse in those early years. He's the guy that usually took most of the heat segment and then made the tag to Sean. He, to me, you'd always get the great 360 sell. He, to me, was the guy that definitely seemed to be steering the ship a bit more, even in promos, too. Sean, by 91, their final year, pulled ahead. But I'd say for those first couple of years, to me, I thought Marty stood out a bit. Don't ask anymore, Ryan. That's, I don't know, whatever. All right, let's see what else we got here. When would you have booked, this is an old one, so I'm dipping back. When would you have booked Lex Luger to be NWA WCW champion, Ed Bennett? Honestly, I think when they did it in 97 was great. Like, that was his best run. We've been chronicling it, Chad and I, and he's been one of our top MVPs since late 95, and it's still going into mid-96. And just, I know myself from watching 97 that he's awesome in 97. It just sucks that they did it so close to Sting coming back that they had to get the belt right back on Hogan. And then he's kind of not the same. Like, 98, he's okay, early Wolfpack, and then his death downhill is just kind of just gives out a bit. But I think if there's a way where you could have maybe gotten the belt on him earlier in 97 and had him have a little run there, like maybe, you know, maybe he wins it at like Spring Stampede or something and give Hogan the summer off and Hogan wins it back at Road Wild heading into Starcade. You could have done that. And Luger just battles the NWO all through the summer as champion. I mean, I guess the other, they kind of did it the other times, right? I mean, they did it in 91 when Flair leaves. I guess the other time you say is 88, right? I mean, just pull the trigger instead of the shit finish. So I guess that could have been it too. But I'm going with early 97 because I think, to me, that was, he was a super, super hot, super over. And just the pop he gets in Detroit on that night was unbelievable. So if there's a way you could extend that reign a little bit. And in retrospect, I mean, I guess the way they ended up building Sting, it's hard to ever take it back. They just botch execution. Luger, though, being the guy to finally beat Hogan instead of Sting could have been a cool story. Like, maybe Sting overplays his hand a bit and Luger ends up taking the Starcade match, winning the title, and then Sting kind of comes back a little pissed off. Like, you know, what the hell? Like, Luger sniped a shot and Luger's like, well, you were on the sideline all this time. What the fuck? I've been here in the grind against the NWO. So maybe that could have led to something cool with them. Greg Diener, did Jeff ever find the Pepsi guy? I will use that as a chance to plug Jeff Learns Wrestling, which made his triumphant return a couple weeks back. Jeff, it was the first time we saw each other in 13 months, and that's a long time for us. So we talked about that, talked about his wedding, talked about the Pepsi guy, and then talked Royal Rumble 92 as well. So be sure to check out Jeff Learns Wrestling. So knock that one off the mailbag. As a fellow Jets fan of the 80s, 90s, I had a few thoughts for you. I always think of Al Toon as one of the greatest wide receivers of all time. How do you feel being on shitty teams affects how legendary a player is assessed? Imagine Al Toon on the Niners at Montana. What's it like being a New York sports fan growing up in New England? Did you ever get a scrap debating Don Mattingly over Wade Boggs? So that is from our good friend Rocco Martone, who, if you do listen to here, that was, he's all over that show. Rocco, I will say this. I'm more of a 90s fellow fan because I really didn't start watching football until like early, as you hear on the Place to Be podcast, probably like 92, 93. It was like, I used to watch the Super Bowl, but it was like more 92, 93 where I really start to, was like into it more. So honestly, Toon is before my time, but I do agree with you that sometimes great players on teams that don't get to the playoffs often or into a Super Bowl absolutely get overlooked. And that's all sports, honestly. I feel like Mike Trout is still not, is still like super underrated with so many fans because I swear it, because the Angels have wasted his entire run. I will say, you know, like my favorite wide receiver Jets is Wayne Corbett. I mean, that's a guy forgotten to time by many fans who was an amazing, just, possession key receiver. You know, everyone thinks of like Wes Welker and even like modern day like Julian Edelman, but like Corbett was that guy too who would just you needed a 3rd and 9. There he was, 11 yards out. Like, every time, you know, you could hit him, and he was so reliable. I loved him. Him and Keyshawn was a super fun tandem before Keyshawn left. It was interesting being a sports fan. I'll be honest with you, it was a lot easier in the late 90s, early 2000s, when the Red Sox still had it won, the Yankees were in the middle of their dynasty, and the Pats, you know, were just like a team that existed, and the East was open. So, like, that was okay. That kind of ended between, I'd say, 01 is when the armor started to come off a little bit, right? The Pats win the Super Bowl. The Yankees blow that World Series against Arizona. Like, I caught a ton of shit. Those were both my senior year at college, which is a real rough back-to-back a few months apart. And then from there, outside of 03, which was a great moment, it was downhill for a while. I will say that those late 2000s were rough because that's at a time in my life where I didn't really have much else going on. So I was super diehard, like live and breathe for those sports teams. Like, if those Yankees Red Sox weekend series were like just a brutal marathon, especially earlier in the year where it seemed like the Red Sox would always kind of dominate before the Yankees would even things out. But I remember some of those series, you get the Friday night, go late into the night, extra innings sometimes. I remember the one where Jason Bay at the fucking walk-off at Fenway. I think that was, might have been 09. And then they'd have the Saturday Fox game, and that would go forever. And then Sunday night ESPN, the grind of that game. Like, those games in the mid to late 2000s were just like a mental exhaustion watching those. And then even the Pats Jets, when you start to get later into the decade, in the Rex Ryan era, those games too were very just heavy and exhausting. And that's again when, you know, if the Jets lost, I couldn't even sleep, right? So like that's faded. Again, I don't know if that's natural. You just get older and have kids and stuff, and those emotional ties lessen. It's a little bit easier to live with the losses as you get older, I guess. But it was tough. It was definitely tough because I definitely was a little bit outnumbered. The growth of like the internet and social media has helped in being able to have, you know, more easy accessible access to teams you like and fans you like on blogs and group chats, and like that absolutely has helped. Also, what helped is about 5 or 6 years ago, I stopped listening to local sports talk, which helped me a lot too. I used to listen to that a lot in my commutes before I had Sirius or podcasts really blew up. So that used to not help too, just being here listening constantly to New England sports talk. So once I dumped that from my life, it helped. All right. Let's see. Let's do a couple more here. I'm also going to tell you that every fourth Saturday on North South, give you From Squared Circle to Silver Screen, the Cowboy Logan Crossland. They break down movies that feature wrestlers or about wrestling. The newest one was about the Scorpion King, and I thought that was a really good installment. And all three of theirs have been really good. They have some good instant chemistry. Also with instant chemistry, Tim Slomka, Justin Pratt, New Gen on a Mission, every other Wednesday, going through the new generation era of WWF. They're into early 93, and they do Superstars along with Raw and pay-per-view, which is awesome. And they have gelled very quickly as well. All right, here we go. Here's a long one from, I'm going to say that because it's someone I already asked a question for. I like to mix it up. Has there ever been a wrestler you like strictly off the character look or look of the wrestler? For me, it would be Gangrel. Never had a great match, but he was just cool to me. That is Justin Pratt. I just mentioned him, co-host of New Gen on a Mission. I think definitely, like, as a youngster, as Gorilla Monsoon would say, I definitely had a bunch of those guys. Like, I loved, you know, it's well known, right? Like, I loved Akeem. Brutus the Barber Beefcake was one of my favorites growing up. So guys like that. Even Honky Tonk Man at that time, like I was kind of into for a bit. Sparky Plug in 94. Like, right, there are guys that come up where I just kind of gravitated to the gimmick for some stupid reason. And again, it was probably just, I don't know if those were even off character work. Just I liked the look of them as kids. But there are definitely people, you know, wrestlers today that stand out like that too, I guess. I mean, Gangrel's a really good one who was super over just based on an entrance. And another guy popped in my head like that is like Bobby Roode, who just had an amazing theme song and presence about him. But definitely, you know, just fine in the ring, I guess. God, here's one I'll throw at you. How about WWE Nakamura? Amazing entrance, amazing presence. And Aaron George, he peaked in his first match and came down since then. But he's another guy you could argue is, like, just from a WWE experience, would be, you know, based off of kind of look or work. I mean, it's such a subjective thing, too, because I think some people would maybe say Sid, but I think Sid's a great worker. It is for what his style is, right? Like, he just goes in there and destroys people. Like, that's what he should do. So for me, that I could see how some would maybe say a guy like Sid. El Gigante? I don't know. It's an interesting question. I'd actually be curious if some people gave their feedback on this one. What are wrestlers that stick out for you that you like just the look or the work as characters versus, you know, Jenny Smith will probably tell you the Bruise Brothers, Harris Boys, who just destroy my life on every podcast I'm on. They show up. She'll probably talk about them as being people she likes based off their look. But all right, let's see. Maybe one more. One more. We'll do one more. One more time. Every fourth Friday, rank and file, Jordan Duncan and friends, bracket-based rank show. They are kicking off an odyssey to determine the greatest sitcom, or I'm sorry, greatest television show theme song of all time. So be sure to check that out. Shrink Wraps will be back again someday, like Frosty the Snowman, I'm sure. That's also every Friday. I'm sorry, every fourth Friday. Jenny, Sean, Tim Capel do the Psychology of Superhero Breakdown. And every Sunday, Second Print Comics, Mark and Remso, Potpourri Comics-based show. If you're a comic book fan, it is an excellent listen. And finally, after every big event, and that includes this weekend's WrestleMania, Viewer's Choice, Marcus, Tim, the Toolman, they will be here delivering an instantaneous breakdown of those shows. Earlier this week, you would have heard them break down TakeOver Tonight. They break down Tonight WrestleMania. They do ECW shows. They do it all. And they record right after the show, and it's up within hours. So be sure to check those out after the big events in wrestling. All right, so this one is a little bit of a subject that I don't like to jump into, but I'm going to get into it. So Ryan Everett, feelings on Peacock editing stuff on WWE Network. I agree that stuff like Piper versus Ben is Brown is racist, but removing that and then leaving Tito Santana Barbarian match to later, which consists of Jesse the Body cramming as many Mexican food jokes as possible into 4 minutes. Personally, they should have gone perhaps the Disney Plus route, where you put a disclaimer in front of anything that could possibly be offensive and add a parental control setting, which Peacock does not have. All right. So, yeah, again, this isn't like something, given my particular race, I'm going to say I never feel like I'm going to be someone to have an opinion on how things like this make others feel. So if there's a feeling that these things could be offensive, and NBC decides they don't want to have that on their network, that's not my decision to say. Like, I get it. I get the feel that, you know, history's history. I could see the route of going with a disclaimer. But I also can say, like, you know, something with Piper Bad News probably should have been scrubbed a long time ago. I'm not going to say, like, oh, this ruins the experience of the network because this is gone. Because I absolutely 100% understand why this should not be something that exists out there. Because even if you say, well, it happened, it didn't happen for a lot of people that may be watching that network. And I like to just try and think of the young person who may tune into that and then have to understand why that's something that existed and why that's something that's being promoted on a network that's going to have as many users as something like Peacock has. So, you know, again, it's not really my space to say. It doesn't affect things for me that greatly. I think there is a question of where do you draw the line, right? To a very lesser extent, it's something we've gone through with, like, the GWWE stuff with, like, a Chris Benoit, Jimmy Snuka, like, you know, like, where do you draw that line? What's okay? And I don't know. I think that's for every person individually to make that decision of what's okay. But I'm never going to be the person to tell you that something isn't going to be offensive to someone else, because I don't know. It may be, and it may be for a very valid reason, like much of this stuff is. So I don't envy the person making these decisions in any way. I do think no matter what the case, even if they do take some of the stuff out, that there is a case to be made that they should slap a disclaimer on 80% of the shit on the network that's being caught over, brought over, for sure. Like, that, to me, would probably be a good idea. All right. Hopefully everyone enjoyed this. Hopefully everyone is enjoying WrestleMania weekend. I know it's not the same, but it's better than last year, and we're getting there. Hope everyone continues to stay sane and safe and healthy and happy. You know, we've survived a lot of bullshit over the past, you know, 13, 14 months. And if you're here listening to this, again, I appreciate the support that you have brought to us at the North South, and your kindness in any reviews and ratings you receive. Again, I'm going to throw my April challenge out there. Rate us, review us, share us, tell a friend, and continue to bring your feedback to Place to Be Facebook group. I am JT. This has been my mailbag. I am out. Take care. Gets